Blog Talk Radio.
The Life is So Beautiful radio show, hosted by yours truly, Vonda Guzman. Today is February the 5th, 2013. Yay! Our call-in number is 347-205-9957, 347-205-9957. And we do have the chat room open today, so you're welcome to come in and chat with us. We always stop and take a breath. Just giving thanks for life today and life more abundantly. Just knowing that life is for us, peace is for us, joy is for us, abundance is for us, and creativity is for us. Thank you, Jesus the Christ. Thank you, our angels, our spirit guides. Thank you, the Holy Spirit. And all the forces of love here and beyond for your keeping power, your keeping strength in our lives today. Blessings over all of my Life is So Beautiful family listeners. Blessings and love. Blessings over all of the children all over the world. Blessings over all of our men. Blessings over all of our families. Blessings over Juwan Ames today as he shares his life with us today. And thank you again for all you have allowed me to serve in love again and again and again. And so it is. I needed that breath today. I had so much on my plate today. Woo. Thank you, God. Thank you. Thank you. Today we have birthdays. This is the Aquarius season. Yay, yaddy, yaddy. We got Dave Fritz, Alicia Kent, Christopher Diltz, Caroline Schaefer. That's one of my agents here in Germany. Anastasia Holbein, Sandra Marie, Anastasia Hannah, and Daniel Bach, and my two beautiful girlfriends and sisters. Lisa Lee will come up on the 9th, and my sweetie girl, Tamara Neal, on the 10th. Woohoo! And she will be on here soon with her new book. Thank you, Tamara, for all of your financial support and your love to the Life is So Beautiful movement. I really appreciate you, and I love you. And this birthday song is for all of you Aquarians, because I love everybody. Yaddy. Okay.
Because it's your birthday, I'm here to celebrate you. Because it's your birthday, you go all and have your way. I know today is your birthday, make a wish, you will see it come true. Because it's your birthday, I'm here 'cause I love you. Yes, this day was made for you, so you do what you want to do. Because it's your birthday, I'm here to celebrate.
Happy birthday, Aquarians! Well, I am just having a ball already because I know it's going to be a hot one up in here today. My guest today is my good friend, my longtime friend, and Jerron Ames. And I tell you, we have gone through so much together, and I am so happy. I'm just up here with tears in my eyes now, because I just been with him so long, and I just see what Spirit has done in his life. And, you know, Jerron has his own cable, jazz cable TV show that he's had for years and has now released his book called Jazz Conversations. And I am so excited to talk with him today and allow him to share his story with us. He is somebody. And today I can say I have never been more proud of who he is and who he is becoming. So please welcome with me, Jerron Ames. Hi, Jerron. Are you here?
I'm here, Vonda, and I'm very glad to be here. And I love your birthday song. Very nice song. Very nice.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I forgot to let people know you could get that birthday song on www.lifeissobeautiful.net as well as anything else. Thanks for reminding me, Jerron. That was
great. Great song. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. Jerron.
Hmm.
Just excited to have you with me today.
I'm more excited to be here, so we're on the same page.
And you know, my first guest of the month for creativity, and you are just that, just creative with what you have done, has a form of a creative expression from within you called the God in you, and I am so happy that we can talk about that today. Jerron, tell our listening audience how you first decided to write this book.
Well, I've had a book in me, I guess, for a long time. But the book is called Jazz Conversations, Revised and Edited 2012. And the book is because I've been on my cable TV show, The Jerron Ames Show, for about 19 years now. I've interviewed many of the jazz legends, people like Charles Lenton, who discovered Ella Fitzgerald, Nancy Wilson, Little Jimmy Scott, Oscar Peterson, Chuck Mangione, Hank Jones, Grady Tate, Alma Jamal, so many, Billy Taylor, Dakota Staggin, Joe Williams, and endless others. So I had all these interviews in my show in the can. So what I decided to do was compile all of the interviews of 18 years into a book, hence Jazz Conversations. Very, very, you know, it's really a history reference book, because these people are telling their stories in their own words, and which, you know, unfortunately many people don't know these people or haven't heard from them before. You never see them anywhere else on television or, you know, even, you know, when they were here. And so my job as a jazz historian and archive is just to try and preserve and archive these legends for future generations.
Well, you did a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful work, because and then when I thought about it, I said, you know, this month is in America, they celebrate Black History Month. Well, they celebrate in some places here in Germany where there's more African Americans, but I just thought, wow, how Spirit had you here today, because these are some very historical, legendary people that you have interviewed, and we just want to talk about some of that today. Now, I want to also mention today that the foreword of the book was written by Annette Hinthoff. Yeah, now, a lot of people may not know who he is, and, you know, you're in New York City, and you are around all of these wonderful people who are very well-known. Can you just give us a little information on who he is?
Well, Nat Hinthoff is arguably the most famous jazz writer in jazz history. He has written for everything from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, founded the Downbeat Jazz magazine back in the day, has interviewed everybody himself, you know, including Ellington and Louis Armstrong and Charlie Parker and every jazz great through history he has interviewed. But Nat Hinthoff is arguably the most famous jazz writer and historian planet, and I'm so grateful that he did write my foreword to my book and that he raved about it. I'm very, very blessed for that because it's you know, we have to continue to promote this great American classical music, as Dr. Billy Taylor called it, which is what it is.
It is. And I just want to read a little bit of the foreword. He said, "This vital addition to jazz history is also entitled to be called Inside Jazz, as I have written in my own books on this indispensable global music. The life force of jazz comes directly from actual life histories of its creators. That is why much of my work has considered of interviews that are really conversations, ranging from Louis Armstrong and Duke Ellington to John Coltrane and Ornette Coleman." He says, "Jerron Ames has demonstrated on his New York-based longest-running weekly jazz cable TV show that he has not only knows what to ask from his guests, but like a jazz improviser, he knows how to listen, thereby allowing each conversation to develop its own life beyond any questions Jerron had prepared." That was awesome. He was really a blessing, huh?
I know, very, very. And you know, it's so, I'm so grateful, Vonda, to have so many people from so many places around the globe actually calling me and emailing me, telling me how much they've enjoyed reading the book and how informative and historical it is. And now it's almost a movement of people trying to get my book in schools and libraries as a history reference book. So, you know, I'm very grateful. It's all a blessing. It's been a labor of love.
Yes.
And, you know, these people, again, in the book, some of them I have, you know, it was their only or last television show ever.
Wow.
And so I have all of this wonderful footage, these people sitting down, and they seem to like to tell me all about their lives. And it's so important to have this history documented because it's important for future generations to know who these people are and what they left to the American music scene, to the world music scene.
That's right. It is so, so sweet. Now, how did you have such a feeling for jazz or even for just music? How did you get this?
Well, I grew up in Louisiana. That's my home, Baton Rouge.
Ah, okay.
And in the 1960s, of course, I was steeped in Motown and, you know, James Brown and Stax Records, and, you know, all that good old stuff, you know. Loved it and love it to this day.
Yeah.
That was my upbringing.
Uh-huh.
But in my home, which, you know, all through the week we heard, you know, my music, Motown and soul music. Mm-hmm. My father, who was one of the founding members of the first black bank in Baton Rouge, First Federal.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, they had, we had a lot of parties in our home. Mm-hmm. And on the weekends, when they had parties at my parents' home, you know, I heard Count Basie and Duke Ellington and Ella Fitzgerald and Sonny Stitt, you know, and all this stuff. I said, "Oh my God, what is this?" You know.
Wow.
So that when I heard it, I was completely, you know, mesmerized by it. But then one day in the early 1960s, I heard a singer named Nancy Wilson.
Yes.
And she sang, "My love is no beginning, my love is no end. No further back and my love won't bend. I'm in the middle." And I said, "Oh my God, what is this?" So anyway, I was completely and unequivocally hooked. And I have been all these years. And so jazz has become my life mission, my passion, my love, my spouse. And so I spent all these years, you know, involved in jazz. I've been performing for many years around the country in different places, Europe and Asia. But getting back to Nancy Wilson, to tie it all in, it was Nancy Wilson 30 years later who actually made my television show, because I got to meet Nancy Wilson over the years as being a fan. I got to meet her, and so when I got my television show many years later, I was a child when I first heard her in 1964. I was like 10 or 9 or something, 11. But jump ahead to 96 when she did my television show. And it was because Nancy Wilson came on my TV show that my show took off and became the historical important show that it is today. And so I'm very grateful to Nancy Wilson for that.
Yeah, you know, the book is really good because it's not just a book about the jazz conversation. That's
right.
Really good. But it's also about life.
Right,
it's
that's
a book
right.
about life, and it's a book about what happens in our lives and how we handle it. And one of the stories in the book, I was reading the book on the train. I said, oh, I guess they say there's a nut back here. Because I was in the back reading the book, the story of how you interviewed Nancy Wilson, and I was laughing until I cried.
Well, it was very funny because, you know, Nancy Wilson was a major star. And she was the first big star I had on my show. And so I wanted this to go right. I wanted everything to go right. And, you know, it was my really, I'd been on television just a couple of years. I didn't know, I was clueless. I had no idea what I was doing. And my best friend Norbert was using a little, you know, handheld camera I got from, you know, the Woolworth. And I hired another fella with a real camera. And so we went to Nancy's hotel over here off Broadway, and we were doing the interview, and Norbert was on my camera. It's like called camera B, and this young fellow was doing the A camera. So anyway, after the interview, we got home. Well, after the interview, the fellow and I who was doing the camera A, he and I had a horrible fight. And it was probably just my nerves, but I cussed the boy out. I went off. I cussed him out. I said horrible things to him. And so, I mean, I really did. And so I huffed out the hotel, and Norbert and I got home, and I put on the tape that, you know, I told him I don't want to see him again. Yeah. And I used the tape that Norbert had. We got home, we put the tape in, and you saw Nancy Wilson and myself sitting there talking, and our lips were moving, and not a word came out. We had no audio. None. A 30-minute TV show and no audio. Vonda, I was completely beside myself.
I know.
So Norbert had to help me up off the ground because I lost it, and then I had to call this young man whom I had just cussed out 20 minutes earlier, and so I didn't want to see him again, you know. And so I had to call him and humble myself and pray that he would take my call, saying to him, listen, I want to apologize for my behavior today. And, you know, I'll pay you extra money for your time. I really appreciate it. And by the way, can I pick up that tape right now? Because I had nothing to use. So I called him and we talked. And he took my call, and I apologized, and I said, I'll have to come down and get the tape right now. And fortunately, he was you know, a very nice young man. Nice young man. He accepted my apology, and I went to get the tape, and so I had a real TV show with Nancy Wilson. And, you know, the rest is history. But I'll tell you this, as an aside, Nipsey Russell, who's a dear friend of mine, said to me, told me the story of two Jewish producers in Hollywood, Sid and Bernie. And Sid and Bernie would curse each other out. They had a big fight, and Sid said, Bernie, I'm never going to talk to you again in life. You're an awful person. You're unscrupulous. You don't do business well. I don't ever want to work with you again in life, ever. I mean it. I would never call you or contact you ever again in life unless I need you.
That sounds like this.
you again in life unless I need you.
I need you.
So I called that cameraman quick and in a hurry.
That was, look, when I first ran on the train, because you said in the book, you said, I fainted.
I passed right out. When I got home and so I had no voice, no audio, I fainted. I went right out.
And he said, Norm, we got you back up. We got you together.
He had to help me up off the floor.
It's a lot of hilarious and a lot of serious writing in this book that will hold.
Well, it's a very important piece of history. It really is. I'm so grateful.
Yes,
but I do want to say that I do owe it all to Nancy Wilson, because when I first got the show, I went to approach people to be on the show, and they would say, what kind of show is this? What's a jazz talk show? And very few people were interested.
Right.
But because I knew Nancy Wilson for many years, and she's been very supportive of up-and-coming artists, which I wish more people today were.
Yes.
But she's from that generation where they always reached out to help others, where she helped me.
Yes.
So when that show was so important, because once I had her on the show, I could go to anybody in the business, anybody, and they would say, well, who have you interviewed? And I would say, well, Nancy Wilson. And invariably, they all said, oh, what time do you want me?
Yes.
Just like that.
Yes. Yes.
And because of her support,
yes,
I managed to get some of the biggest names in history. So
I'm
very grateful, yes.
But that's the heart of Nancy. I mean, Nancy is always doing something to give back.
That's right, always.
She's been on the NAACP. She had these stables that people could use for whatever they were doing.
And she was very big in the 60s with the civil rights movements and performing and marching. So her heart is and soul in the right place.
Yes.
Vonda, it's a wonderful piece of work. And again, people are so diverse. I don't just have the stars of the stage.
That's right.
On the show, you know, headliners like Nancy and Joe Williams and Oscar Peterson, and you know, all those people. I have people behind the scenes.
Yes.
Like a gentleman named Art DeLugoff, who was the founder of the Village Gate, and one of the most important nightclubs in the history of jazz, in the history of New York, and so. We had a two-hour conversation, and it's, you know, he booked Aretha Franklin's first show in New York.
Ah, so.
You know, so another gentleman by the name of George Avakian, a Russian Jewish fellow who's he's in his 90s now, but he invented the LP.
Oh, okay.
You know, so,
this is history.
The whole history of that, so that's in the book.
Yeah.
And Dr. Albert Murray, who was one of the co-founders of the Jensen Lincoln Center, and he's a famous writer. He's Faulkner and Richard Wright and Henry Baldwin and Hemingway and et cetera. And all the stories he told about his relationship with Duke Ellington and his writings of Count Basie. I mean, just historical knowledge from these people who were there in the trenches, who helped to create this music that we call jazz. So it's full of really good stories and tidbits and history and fun.
And we've got to get it here in Germany, because I've already spoken to people over here, and you know these people over here are really true jazz lovers, but they're also very much into the history.
That's right.
Of jazz, they hold.
That's
it
right.
So
and more so,
Europeans
and Asians are more in tune to Black American Black American classical music, which is jazz, than even Black Americans.
Yes, I mean, over here, and this is how I have come into it. This is how I've grown into it, you know, because of, you know, they know the history. They
talk
about somebody and this, that.
That's
and I said, oh, man, I better get, you know, some information. And then I started adding more of it to my repertoires and things like that. And I am just enjoying doing, you know, Nancy Wilson, Save Your Love for Me. You know, just all kinds of good stuff.
That's right.
I'm
of course.
Enjoying
of course.
It. I mean, it is so beautiful to sit there and say, you know, look, you know, I'm just listening to her, but I'm not a Nancy Wilson, but I do my share.
That's right. But see, you know, all this is so much. People ask me why do I do all the old music? Because I believe in reinventing old material for a new audience. There are millions of people who haven't heard about any of these people I've mentioned, their music or anything, you know, the composers of these great American standard songs. So, you know, I know there's a lot of new material out there, and I respect and appreciate that.
Right.
But I believe my mission is to reinvent the old material for a new audience. And that has been what I've been doing for a long time. Now, let me tell you about one gentleman in the book I find, because your show is based in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I had a gentleman on my show. He's very famous in Berlin. His name is Coco Schumann.
Yes.
He's a jazz guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
And his story is, I think, one of the most fascinating ones I've heard in my life, because during the Nazi reign in Germany, he was selected by Hitler to play. His group was called the Ghetto Swingers. They're based out of Berlin. And during the Holocaust, Hitler had Coco Schumann's band stand by the crematorium and play jazz while they marched Jews to the gas chambers.
Are you serious?
And this entire story is in my book called Jazz Conversations Revised and Edited 2012. And it is a fascinating and chilling tale of the horrors of the Holocaust and what part jazz played in that.
Wow, and that was deep. Now I didn't get that when I went through and got my interviews and stuff. Okay, I'm gonna have to finish the book. I'm definitely
Coco Schumann. It's a very important
Coco
story.
Schumann. Okay, and I saw that you had a very nice interview with Clark Terry,
the wonderful trumpeter who. Clark Terry. I mean, Clark Terry is loved by everybody. But he was, you know, years ago he was in the Johnny Carson band with but he shares such stories about his life and the music and the influence on the music. So a lot of these people became, they would teach.
Yeah.
They would reach back and teach because a lot of times jazz musicians didn't want to do that, but for some reason it comes natural to real jazz people just to do what we do, and we become teachers of this music to people who seek it and want to learn it. And Clark Terry became one of the most important not just jazz trumpeters, but lecturers and teachers of this music, a real historian on the music. So he's been a real blessing. And he's still with us. He's not playing anymore. He's about 90 now in a wheelchair. But I'm so grateful I got – see, most of the people that were on my show, I got them when they were, you know, pretty much up in age.
Yeah.
For instance, the woman named Phoebe Jacobs, who was over the Louis Armstrong Foundation.
Uh-huh.
And she worked very closely with Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan, Peggy Lee, et cetera. And the stories that she told about – working with Louis Armstrong and how he left, you know, money to start the Louis Armstrong Foundation, which is now based in Queens. It's a library.
Mm-hmm.
His home is a historical residence. It's his museum. And Phoebe Jacobs, who lives right around the corner from me here in New York, she was in charge of it until she died just about a year ago.
Uh-huh.
And she was in her late 90s. The gentleman, named John Levy, he just died last year. He was 100 years old.
Oh.
And he was the first black jazz business manager in the business.
Oh.
And he guided the careers of Nancy Wilson and Joe Williams. His first client was George Shearing, the famous blind pianist from England. And he was the bassist for George Shearing for many years and then became his manager, which made him the first black manager in jazz back in the 40s. And so, but he became the most important black jazz manager and agent with a roster, again, consisting of Nancy Wilson and Joe Williams and Dakota State and Shirley Horn and Wes Montgomery and Cannonball Adderley and at one time Sarah Vaughan, at one time Roberta Flack. He had 50 or 60 of the biggest names in the business. And I've always respected him. I always wanted him to manage me. He never did, but he respected me, and I was so grateful that before he died, he came on the Jerron Eames Show.
Oh, that is awesome.
It really is.
You're, This historical information is awesome. I'm so glad that the listeners, whether or not you're into jazz or not, will just hold this close to you. I mean, this is Black History Month, and just to know that these people really have done such a great work to make sure that they did not give up. These people are people who also helped Quincy Jones and others to come in, because, like you say, they always shared it, they spread it. They didn't they didn't hold it like they do today. They didn't hold it just for themselves. I'm the one, you know. They shared it and gave it out, because Quincy Jones, you used to hang around, and he would, you know, they would know who he was, and he'd keep playing and keep playing. They said, come on, bring him on tour with us, you know.
That's right.
It was just that type of love and that type of family.
Well,
that,
see, that whole, that back in that era that we're talking about, it was a more, particularly, like, for instance, I talk in my book, in the preface of the book, about how in the 60s, the black music, the black experience, the black sound. It was a blackness to the music, and it was a love in the music. For instance, you had Curtis Mayfield singing, "Keep on pushing." I can't stop now. You had Marvin Gaye asking, "What's going on?" You know, you had Aretha singing, "R-E-S-P-E-C-T." So we
That's
had messages. But my point is, the black sound had messages.
Yes.
James Brown said, "Say it loud."
Yeah. Okay.
And changed, started a movement.
That's right.
So the music then was very positive, very uplifting, and very, it was a united thread to keep us as a people moving
together.
Forward.
Moving forward.
But
that's
I believe
right.
the powers that be did not want that, and shortly thereafter, black music became a negative, violent form of called gangster rap, and started becoming derogatory against black women and each other, and the whole culture changed.
Yeah.
And I believe because of that, we've lost two generations of young black kids, because the music of the 60s that we grew up on, that love and unity and message music was a bit too powerful for the powers that be, and they wanted to water that down and bastardize that, and they did.
I remember one of the comedians that came on, as I see here that you have also you interviewed one of my beautiful comedians that I love, George Carlin.
Oh, my favorite. I adore George Carlin. In fact, if I may tell you this quick story about George Carlin.
Go ahead.
I think George Carlin was the I don't really call him a comic, because he was so much more. He was a complete satirist and the best political satirist I think ever. His idol was Lenny Bruce. But George Carlin, I think I did talk about Johnny Carson in my book, but George Carlin was such an important and profound satirist that I think he was dangerous. But my point is this. I wanted him so much on the show, so I called George Carlin. George Carlin was the number one comic in America at the time.
Yes.
And he, you know, up until he died, he was still voted the number one comic in the country for the last almost 20 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
But so a couple, he died, I think, in 2009, I think he died.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was eight.
Uh-huh.
Eight. So he died in 2008. But anyway, before he died, he was coming to New York. He had a sellout performance in New York because all his shows were sold out. And he was at some big arena. It was sold out. So I called his office in Hollywood. To show you the kind of man that he was, I called his office in Hollywood. I said, my name is Jerron Eames, and I have a local jazz TV show in New York. I know Mr. Carlin is coming to New York, and I would love so much to have a short interview with him if he would like to do that. And so they took my information down and gave them my number, and I said, thank you, and I hung up. 2 days later, the phone rang. I said, hello. The voice said, Jerron. I said, yes. He said, it's George. I said, George,
beautiful.
Too. You said George Carlin.
Beautiful.
Isn't that wonderful? The number one comic in the world. That's how real he was.
He was, but you knew it when you were listening to him on stage.
That's right. That's
you
right.
You knew it.
But a lot of people.
About this man.
That's right. On that level, you know, have your people call my people, or you put you through all these changes and all this.
Yes.
Real people don't behave that way. He picked up the phone and called me. He said, Jerron, I checked you out on the internet. I would love to do your show.
Isn't
just
that
like
awesome.
That.
That
just
is,
like
oh,
that. He said, I'll be at the W Hotel, such and such date, be there.
That was awesome.
And that was one of the best interviews I ever did because our lives were so similar. As he, I was kicked out of everything I ever joined. He was kicked out of Boy Scout, Cub Scout, track, football, band, choir, theater, the army. He was kicked out of everything.
He was kicked out
of everything. Everything he was kicked out of. And so was I. And so we had a really good conversation, really good meeting. And in fact, I said to him something that I'm so grateful because he really enjoyed what I said to him. I said, you know, we're talking about school, how we both hated school, and I was kicked out of every school I went to, and so was he. And so I just said to him, you know, I said, I never let school interfere with my education. And he thought that was wonderful.
That is off the chain. That is off the chain. I tell you, Jerron, this has been great. We're going to take a break, and then we want to come back. We got some callers, and we got DJ Louis Ray. He's on here, and he's raving about George Collin, too. That's
I love it.
Yeah, that George Collin, he be somebody. But what I love about this historical piece is that these people never gave up. They never gave
That's
up.
Right.
They just kept right on moving through
That's
life.
Right.
And you have information in there about Ella, the guy who found her.
I have on my show Charles Linton, who discovered Ella Fitzgerald.
Yes, very important
American history.
Yes, yes. And so, you know, I'm going to do a song that I wrote called Never Give In, Never Give Up, because that's what these people, that's what this historical piece is about. It's about helping us to not give up. No
That's
matter
right.
What's going on?
You got to keep showing up. That's happening. Just keep showing up.
Keep showing up and let
keep
this creative
up.
Process
That's right.
snatch you. Because after a while, that creative process will snatch you after they see that you're not going to give up. It will snatch you. The universe will snatch you and say, okay, let's let them through. Let's use them. So never give up. Never give in. Enjoy.
Never give up.
To get from point A to point B, taking so long sometimes you can't see just where the universe wants you to be. But you must believe, only way to receive. Just when you think that it's happening, sure enough. Something happens and it feels like you've been snubbed. But just hold on to his unchanging.
Never give up.
of never give up and never give in.
Never give up, never give in. I love it.
Let
love
them say
it.
What they want, but keep
love
on
it.
Moving. That's
love
what the
it.
Creative process is about. That's what
that's
the
a
book
wonderful
is
song, Vonda. That's a
thank
wonderful
you,
song.
Thank
wonderful.
You so
I have to get up here and do a hot foot.
I know that's right. I
get up,
get
up.
My microphone gets to move, and I say, "Set down."
Yeah, that was wonderful. Yeah. Never give up.
Yeah.
Never give in.
Yeah.
Love it, Vonda. Love it.
When I was listening to it, you know, though, I'm thinking about all these legendaries that you've interviewed. You know, I'm
mm-hmm.
thinking of
mm-hmm.
how their process went. I'm thinking about how it was not, you know, so easy for them. At
and
all,
especially
at that
in the days when they had to do this.
Woo-hoo.
You know, I mean, when all these great people had to sleep on buses and
yeah.
because they couldn't eat in white establishments,
that's
and they had
right.
to go through the back doors of most of the clubs where they performed, and they were constantly being harassed and beaten and murdered by white police officers around.
Yeah.
You know, it was a brutal existence. And
yeah.
as Maya Angelou would say, and still I rise.
And still, woo-hoo. So I'm thankful for you being on here with your book today at this time where we're talking about creativity and how we are people of creativity. And it's like I say, I hadn't even made any plans about this February or whatever it's Black History, you know, because I'm over here in Germany. I don't even think about it. But the Spirit of God has a way of just channeling us into that information and that message that he wants us to hold on to, because so many of the younger people they're not realizing they are not conscious. And so this
clueless.
Show, I pray, yeah, this is clueless. You, oh, now you had me mean. No, I'm just saying. But anyway, we got some callers for you, so we want to take a call for you, you know, as we're moving right along. You all right, sweetie? You coughing?
I'm coughing, Vonda. You know, I just got back from a cruise ship. I spent two weeks on the Caribbean.
Uh-huh.
I just returned from Barbados and San Juan and St. Thomas and St. Lucia, and I was performing on the cruise ship the role of Billy Eckstein in the musical, and
uh-huh.
I just got back to the cold weather in New York just, two or three days ago. So, yeah, I have a slight cough, but I am blessed beyond words.
Okay, well, we're going to take this call and let them bless you. Area code 347-876 number. Who's calling? You push. You have your light on here. So, do you want to speak? 347-876. Okay.
That's me.
Up
you hear me?
You. Yeah, I hear
you.
You. Who is
it? I'm just listening. Whose number is that? Gerard and Vonda. This is Michelangelo, honey.
Hey, Michael.
Oh, hey, Michael.
I'm so busy listening to what y'all talking about and getting the good about and crying in between everything like that and rejoicing on all the message on the light. So congratulations, Gerard, on your fantastic book, man.
Thank
I'm
you.
So
but let me say, wait, let me tell the world that it was Michelangelo who took the photo cover for my book. So
yes.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Because if I must say so myself, the cover is magnificent.
You know, I'm sitting up here, I'm getting ready to break out in a song. I'm thinking about our song too. I'm like, it's a family, you're there. I'm
yeah.
here with Michelangelo. Michael, how are you?
You know it. I tell you, I'm doing, it's a fantastic life. And again, with the pride and the feeling of the message that's being shared from what you're doing, and bringing us together in such a beautiful way with your radio show, Vonda,
mm-hmm.
and that Duran is there, who you've known for many, many years, and bringing out the word of his book and his musicality and your musicality and the message that touches many people's hearts and souls. So I'm just saying, I just love you both, love you all, and I'm just giving
love
you a call. You hear me?
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, peace and love. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, keep up. Yeah, stay on with us. We got a few more minutes left, okay?
Thank you, Michael. God bless you, buddy.
Okay, I love you, Michael.
All right, ciao, baby.
Okay. Isn't that awesome?
That was nice.
That's
yeah.
nice. That's very,
very
nice.
Very, very nice.
And
great guy.
But I also noticed that you have Maxine Brown. I don't know if people remember her. But the,
Maxine Brown had a string of hits in the 1960s.
Yeah.
She was on Scepter label, which was a sister label to Tamela Records. And many of you may know, but she had several hits, but many of you may know the song that she had hit with called When My Friends Told Me You Had Someone New, I Didn't Believe a Single Word Was True, and I Didn't Listen to What They Said. I Kept Right On Singing, Oh No, Not My Baby. That was a big hit for Maxine.
That was a
big hit.
And did she do the other song, Baby Is All In My Mind? Or My
Baby Is All In
Yes.
My Mind.
Oh,
yes, she did.
And then
that's
she
right.
But she's still singing, isn't she?
Maxine is still singing. She was sick about a year ago. I went to visit her in the hospital often, and we talk often, and she's doing fine now. She's singing. She still looks fabulous. She had a great career. She's still going strong, and she's blessed.
Yes,
and, Maxine Brown was a wonderful rhythm and blues singer, started in the church.
Yes,
but,
that's
she caught such a problem from singing because her parents didn't want her father particularly didn't want her to sing what's called the devil's music.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, Sam Cooke went through the same situation when he started singing when he left the spirituals and the Soul Stirrers and started singing pop. They were saying that he was guilty of singing the devil's music, and Maxine Brown and many people of that era who came out of the church went through the same kind of head treatment.
Really,
you know, they were
really cute.
Right.
Really cute. Right. Yeah, that's right. And you know, that also happened with it just crossed my mind, somebody else said it had happened to Tina Turner. You know,
mm-hmm.
They kind of like put her out the church. Get out of here. You can't be singing and clapping and jumping and talking about God. You can't, that's no respect to God. And so she went into Buddhism. So it's funny, though, how we, if we don't learn how to perceive things, that we can harm so many people. You know, our perception means a lot in life. And I think now the creative process is bringing us all closer together, regardless of what color or what age or whatever, bringing us closer together as a paradigm shift for us to shift our thinking and our perception of each other. But first, I believe that we have to shift our perception of ourselves.
That's right. That's where it starts.
Because since I've been in Germany and living around all kinds of people and living in Europe and stuff, I've really, you know, known and been grown and grew up in a lot of ways and shifted my perception about how I viewed others and how I viewed. But first, I had to shift it about how I viewed myself.
Yourself, that's right.
Yeah, so this historical piece here is showing us a lot also about how a lot of our people back then were even viewing themselves because of what was put on them, you know, that I'm not good enough, blah, blah, blah.
They had to eternalize a lot of that stuff that the society put on them. And that's some heavy stuff, heavy baggage.
That's some heavy, but they had the music to sing through it and everything.
That's right.
I mean, through it all, it was still a blessing, you know.
That's right. That's right. Because, again, all that we as African Americans have gone through, people of African ancestry, which was some of the most, you know, barbaric treatment known to modern civilization, I have to go back to my Angela again, and still I rise.
Because
all the madness that we've been through, we are still here. We are still loving and creating and spiritual. And blessed, and you know, this is part of all. This is God's plan. I'm grateful to be a part of it. I'm so grateful to be where I am at this stage of my life right now. And I owe a lot of that mindset to you, because you helped me get through a situation that threatened to destroy me. And I'm so grateful for your friendship. And well, you know I am. You know I am.
Yeah, baby, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy, but I tell you, you came by. I'm proud of who you are today and who you are becoming, Jerron. I tell you, but I can remember years ago, I used to hang up the phone and say, Lord, do I have to call him back?
I was mad as a hatter. You know that.
But look at you now.
Look at me now. Yes. You know, I'm looking. I interviewed a wonderful interviewer was I think one of the most important entertainers in the last century was Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
Sammy Davis was a master at all that he did. He did it all. Yeah. He did it all extremely well. But I had his wife on my show, Al Tavis, before she died a few years ago.
Oh yeah, Al Tavis.
And Al Tavis really Davis, cool. Yes, and you know, she was a famous dancer.
Yeah.
But she the story that she told about Sammy Davis, you know, how as big and famous as he was, which I mentioned earlier, these people still couldn't perform in Las Vegas, go to the front door, and et cetera. And how it was Frank Sinatra who helped to break that barrier.
Yes,
to get,
that's
you know,
it.
So all that's in the book, all that kind of historical stuff that people just may not know.
Yeah.
When I interviewed Ruth Ellington, who's a dear friend of mine and the sister of Duke Ellington, mm-hmm. Ruth lives right near me in New York on Park Avenue, where she lived, but she died 56 years ago or so. And the stories of how she would sit as a little girl and listen to Duke Ellington at the piano composing some of his most famous compositions.
Wow.
And just, you know, that type of sensitiveness in the book.
Yeah.
I just think it's so important for people, particularly people who don't know about this part of American culture.
Right.
Maybe they can learn something.
Yes, that they can learn something. And I think it's time for all of us to open up to a little bit more than what, you know, this tunnel vision that we've all been living through, you know. And
mm-hmm.
this is all that we've gone through have brought us to a place now where we all are becoming one. And God knows I'm thankful and grateful for it, and God knows I love everybody. But I
mm-hmm.
still know that it's important for me to understand my history and understand the historical moments in history where a lot of things were brought to the forefront, and a lot of us was helped by, another person of another color or another
That's right.
culture and things
mm-hmm.
like that in order to
mm-hmm.
bring help us through. So we've
mm-hmm.
all been one together regardless, because there are all kinds of people in the world, and spirit will use who wants to be used.
Mm-hmm.
I am so thankful and grateful that we've had this time today, Jerron. I need you to really tell people now where they can get this book.
Well, the book, again, it's a red book. So when you go online, it's two versions. Only get the red book. It's called Jazz Conversations, Revised and Edited, and it's at Amazon.com. So please go to Amazon.com and order Jazz Conversations, Revised and Edited 2012. My next project is what I'm working on now is a documentary, because I have 18 years of footage, priceless footage that no one else in the world has. So I'm putting together a documentary also called Jazz Conversations. So I'm busy and I'm grateful, but yes, please go to Amazon.com.
Yes,
to get Jazz Conversations.
This would be a way of supporting Jerron. If we, as people, would go in and get the book, you will see a very handsome man on his head, mixed gray and black, and he looks gorgeous. And I tell you, he's dressed gorgeous. He's always gorgeous, though. Ever since I've been knowing him, he's gorgeous. I was like, who is this up in here? Like, I love the pictures that you have in the book. You have lots of beautiful pictures of people, all the people you interviewed and others. You have lots of pictures. And I must say, you have a girl in here that I know, Vonda Guzman. I want to say
cool.
thank you for being here. And thank you for putting me in your notes of giving thanks to those who have supported you.
You have been my spiritual advisor for a long time, and for that I'm very grateful.
Well, I thank you, and I tell you, I say, well, Lord, if I can help Jerron, I can help anybody. No, I'm just praying. I'm just praying. But I do love you. And
love you more.
And everybody, please go to Amazon.com, and please get Jazz Conversations, Jerron K. Ames,
E-A-M-E-S. First name is J-A-R-O-N, Jerron, J-A-R-O-N. Last name is Eames, E-A-M-E-S.
Yes, and just stay on with us, Jerron. We're just going to do a couple of minutes of a meditation,
mm-hmm.
the month of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And we just want to call forth the creative source within us to come forth and let the spirit know that we are all available to this creative source anytime, anywhere, anytime.
Mm-hmm.
To use us, and I'm just thankful and grateful to you. I love you, love you, love you.
Love you more, Vonda. Thank you so much.
such a beautiful instrument that God has been able to use in such a phenomenal way. And I just bless you and love you. Let's go in and take a breath. I am the creative process of the universe. I am allowing myself to join forces with my silent partner and allow myself to be used and allow myself to use my gifts as a form of love and divine expression in this universe. I use my gifts and talents to touch the heart of those who do not yet know that they have that same intelligence by way of gifts and talents to serve while they are here right now, down here on the ground, while they're still around. Yes. I ask today to Great Spirit to guide us as we release ourselves, release our fears, release our doubts, release those belief systems that no longer work for us, release all people, places, and things that will hold us to our past. I am now ready to be about the business of who I truly am as a divine creator on this planet now. I am the creator who have been created in the image and the likeness of God. I accept my call now, Great Spirit. I accept my call now, Holy Spirit. I accept my call now, God. I accept my call now, universe. As we all accept our call, we can let go. And the creative process is coming after you. So, not only get ready, but be ready. Because it's about to come to you. We send this message to the four corners of the earth, the north, the east, the south, and the west. And we say, thank you for choosing us as we have decided to be chosen. Many are called, but few choose. Will you choose today? Then let it be so. And so it is. Even now. Amen. Amen. Yes. Amen. And so it is. Spiritual revolutionaries, let's get ready.
Oh, no way. Yes, I'm a spirit.
I love you all. Namaste. Namaste.